is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Wow, a lot in the news. I want to get into, and in fact, in this first hour, my original plan was just to talk about, you know, Bernie Sanders and politics, and there's a great piece, How to Talk to Your Kids About Bernie Sanders. But then we had this shooting in Garland, Texas, and you know, Pam Geller's up to her old tricks. There's a backstory to this shooting that is by and large not being told. Now, you know, this is not in any way to justify anybody shooting anybody. All right, there is just plain old flat out, unless it's, you know, self-defense or time of war or something like that. There's no justification, no rationalization for trying to kill somebody. And apparently these two guys, you know, they shot this guard in the ankle. He's been hospitalized and released. But here's the thing. Zed Jelani is writing about this over at Alternet. And Zed points out, first of all, this, you know, Pam Geller, who put this thing together, this $10,000 prize for the best cartoon of Muhammad event in Texas. You know, that's obvious. You know, this is inflammatory. This is pushing it in their faces. And she got the exact response that she wanted, which is very unfortunate. And it does not reflect the vast majority of Muslims all over the world. I mean, you know, the massively vast majority of Muslims. But to Pam Geller and to her choice of Garland, Texas, there's some things you need to know. First of all, the Los Angeles Times referred to Pam Geller. This is, again, my source for this is Zed Jelani's piece, Garland, Texas, scene of last night's shooting is a hotbed of anti-Muslim bigotry. Zed writes, Geller is not a critic of Islam, as the Los Angeles Times wrote of her last night. Her goal is to cleanse the Western world of Muslims in much the same manner Slobodan Milosevic wanted to cleanse the Balkans of its Muslim population. You recall his Slobodan Milosevic and Radovan Karadžić, as I recall. But Milosevic, he was the psychiatrist who set up the rape camps, and I mean, there was ethnic cleansing and genocide. But anyhow, she on her website, on Pam Geller's website, she promotes a British activist, again quoting Zed Jelani. She promoted a British activist solution to that country, the UK's quote Muslim migration problem. Quote, this is from the site that Pam Geller is pointing to. If a government wants to learn how to manage growing Islamic problems, let's take some advice from Ottoman army officer Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. Atatürk abolished Islam by putting a complete ban on Islamic materials, demolishing mosques, and removing any traces of Islam in his country to get rid of the evil. Those who tried to revolt were put in their place or basically killed. It is time for the UK to stop wasting their military abroad, but bring them to patrol their own streets and begin to remove Muslims. Is this starting to sound like Adolf Hitler in 1933? And it is vital time to plan and arrange deportation programs and even arrange new deportation programs for practicing Muslims born in England to be deported from their countries, their parents' country of origin. You know, she bought these highly inflammatory bus ads in New York. I mean, she's doing everything she can to jack up the publicity for her hate group, her hate thing. But here's the backstory on Garland that I think is really amazing. 10% of the population of Garland, Texas, is Asian, and many of those Asians are from Indonesia and Malaysia, Muslim countries. There are a lot of Muslims in Garland. And so last January, Zed writes, a group of Muslims dedicated to peace and dedicated to denouncing terrorism. These are the moderate Muslims. These are the progressive Muslims. I don't know if this had anything to do with the progressive Muslims of America, PMAUSA.org, I think is the website. No, I've got that wrong. It'll come to me. Anyway, holding signs saying, you're not Americans, don't fly our flag. Hang on just a second, let me back up here. Last January, a group of Muslims dedicated Muslims for Progressive Values, MPVUSA.org. That's the website. Sorry about that. Last January, a group of Muslims dedicated to peace and denouncing terrorism held a conference there. The conference was titled Stand with the Prophet Against Violence and Hate and was focused around a fundraiser to build a new center to combat extremism and negative perceptions of Islam. In other words, the conference was an organizing point for those modern Muslims we are often told do not exist, at least by people like Pam Giller. So how were they greeted? Keep in mind, this was just 4 or 5 months ago. Same town. And, you know, in Zed Jelani's opinion, this is why Pam Geller chose Garland, Texas. As moderate or progressive Muslims gathered, people showed up, thousands of protesters, holding signs saying, you are not Americans, don't fly our flag. This meeting was held in a school, and they went to the school board and yelled about it. Lavona Martindale said, we pay our taxes to that school. I don't want to see them here. Greg McKinley, another protester, said, we're here to stand up for the American way of life from a faction of people who are trying to destroy it. No, they're not trying to destroy it. Whatever happened to religious tolerance? We have gone so far from founding principles. McKinney added, if they want to live their life like the Middle East, they can go back to the Middle East. Some of the protesters came armed. You know, Texas, you can carry a weapon. It's astonishing. So anyhow, I wanted to open with that. Your thoughts are welcome, but I think it just kind of stands alone. And I'm very, very disappointed by how much press and Pam Geller is getting without, you know, and in this press that she's getting, she's being taken seriously. You know, she's been put on CNN and whatnot. And it's like she's not even a joke. She's worse than a joke. Pam Geller is one of those people who seems to, at least from everything I've read, and I believe that I debated her a few years back on this program, seems to just thrive on whipping people up and getting hate going. So, to Bernie Sanders. Senator Sanders announced his campaign for the presidency on Thursday of last week. Friday, he was on our program. In the 24 hours from the time he announced on Thursday until whatever time it was on Friday, he raised $1.5 million from 35,000 donors with an average donation of $43. That is more money the Bernie Sanders raised in his first day of campaigning than was raised by Rand Paul in his first day of campaigning. And he did this whole money bomb thing that had literally had national publicity. It's more money than Marco Rubio raised in his first day of fundraising. And it's more money than Ted Cruz raised in his first day of fundraising. So an interesting question here posed by, and I want to get into Chuck Todd, by the way, in Republican Lies, by Kimberly Harrington. HoneySuperHoneyStaySuper.com is her website. It's titled, How to Talk to Your Kids About Bernie Sanders. And she says, sometimes it can be scary and confusing for kids when they're faced with an unknown, like a politician who actually represents the regular people who voted for him. Share more of this with you after the break. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Bernie said this amazing thing about Scandinavia, and I think I mentioned John Boehner lying on TV over the weekend. We'll get to that, too. And welcome back. Wow. Let's see here. Marcia, or is it Marcia in Murfreesboro, Tennessee?
Marcia.
Marcia. Hey, Marcia. You're on the air.
Hi.
Thanks for watching Free Speech TV.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for being on. My son gets the little text from Pat Papantonio. And he got one yesterday that said that the prison industrial complex can sue states if states don't maintain quotas.
That's correct. In some states, it depends on the state, and it depends on the contract that the state signed with the for-profit prison companies. And many of those contracts require that the state maintain, 90% is the typical threshold, that the state maintain 90% occupancy in the private prison.
What the hell kind of country do we live in?
I know. This is the thing. When you privatize the vote, which is the way we administer the commons, and yes, we have privatized our vote. We no longer have control over it. And when you privatize your schools, and that's aggressively going on, and you privatize your prisons, these are all, and then, you know, in the background, the more slow, creeping privatization of our water, of our electricity, of our sewage, of all these essential services. And it's happening more rapidly in places like Michigan, you know, where the governor can simply declare democracy no longer exists. This is a foundational and fundamental destruction of the idea of the commons, the idea on which this country was founded. And in fact, I'm in the second hour. I'm going to get into it isn't a private prison, but Don Siegelman just got a. I'm on the Don Siegelman email list. If you go to free-don.org, you can get on there. And did you know that the prison that he's at, the federal prison he's at, they only serve two meals a day, breakfast and lunch? If you want dinner, you got to buy it.
Tom, my son was imprisoned at the age of 15.
Oh, Marcia, I'm sorry.
In Georgia. He's racially mixed. You would not believe what we went through. You would not believe the stories. It's become the place for the mentally ill.
Yep.
And what they do to them is chilling.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm retired military, and my husband was retired military. He was in Vietnam, and that killed him. We didn't serve for this.
Yeah. Yeah. And not just you, but everybody else. I mean, this is we have to recover this country.
Yep.
Thank you, Marcia. Yeah, thanks for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. We have to do this, and this is what Bernie Sanders' campaign is all about. In large part, is reclaiming our commons. It's repudiating, and not just Bernie Sanders, all of us, and you know, with or without Bernie and all this other stuff. We have to repudiate this bizarre idea that somehow government is evil or bad when. I mean, just consider the cognitive dissonance. We celebrate George Washington and the Revolutionary War and all that kind of stuff, which was fought to start a government. And then Ronald Reagan comes along and says the government is the problem? It's time for us to repudiate Reaganism in all its forms, from its tax breaks to its privatization to its idea. As Margaret Thatcher said, there's no such thing as society, only a group of individuals. It's just time to repudiate the whole thing. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So the question, how do you talk to your friends about Bernie Sanders? And this is really meta to this larger issue, this larger question of how do we talk to our friends about the state of America? You know, from Fox so-called News, the official voice of the Confederate States of America, you know, whipping up fear and hatred and promoting people like Pam Geller to the theft of our commons and the selling off of our commons to changing the rules of the game so that our manufacturing jobs go overseas and our inner cities are devastated, Baltimore, Detroit, to changing the rules of the game so that the rich can get fabulously rich while everybody else gets screwed. And I'll get to that in just a second, too. But this is just hysterical, this piece by Kimberly Harrington. She says, sometimes it can be scary and confusing for kids when they're faced with an unknown like a politician who actually represents the regular people who voted for them. As you tuck them into bed, don't be surprised if you hear questions like, but what about the billionaires? Who's going to speak for them? Or why is Bernie angry all the time? She says, you know, the best way to address your kids' concerns is to kind of ease into it. She talks about how the last time she tried to explain government to her 10-year-old, you know, government shutdown, he said, wow, you know, it's, he said, wow, it sounds like they don't know how to do their jobs. They should all be fired. And she says, there's no telling what sort of bloodlust this whole Bernie situation could unleash in our household. And I'm betting that your family is struggling with the same sense of unease. So she put together some common questions that kids will ask, you know, what about Bernie? And some suggested answers. She also said, you've probably been asking some of these questions, too, so don't feel shy about talking to yourself about Bernie Sanders. We all do. It's completely natural. So first question from a child. What does it mean when a politician doesn't lie? Answer, well, it means that he or she is telling the truth. I realize this is the sort of behavior you might expect from your teacher or your librarian. But, you know, with politicians, she writes, we're used to being lied to. We like it. It's soothing. So this situation is uncomfortable for us, too, us adults. Just know this. You're not alone. We will get through Truthmageddon, Honest Apocalypse 2016 together, right? Also known as Bernie. And then what's he so angry about? And she writes, if your kids have only seen Bernie during Senate Budget Committee hearings, and let's face it, what kid hasn't, they might think he's the angriest uncle in angry uncle town. But we live in Vermont, so we've seen Bernie all over the place, grocery shopping at our local market, walking down Church Street, or driving around town in his consistently of the people car. He is our Jimmy Carter. He just looks like a regular guy doing regular guy things. In fact, not once have I ever seen him trying to filibuster in the produce section or point at, then flip out on somebody at a 4th of July parade. But it turns out when you're in Washington, D.C., she writes, trying to do your job, there's so much to be angry about. So she says, you know, basically, oh, here, this is a great line. She says, again, this is Kimberly Harrington at Medium.com and HoneyStaySuper.com. She says, for some reason, Bernie takes his job seriously. He believes that people shouldn't have to buy representation in their government. And Bernie highlights issues most other politicians really don't care about, like taking care of veterans and our senior citizens, equal pay for women, the importance of family farms, the unknowns of GMOs or dental care. Dental care? Yes, dental care. So, you know, it goes on. She goes on with it, and I'll just... Why isn't he telling you what to do with your body, Mom? Well, for some reason, he believes that women like me can make healthcare decisions with our healthcare providers instead of with our employers or our government. Whoa, that's novel. And then this final one. Why is he even bothering to run when he can't win? If a kid asks you that, here's her answer. This is just brilliant. She said, I'm going to lay this out real plain and simple to you kids. None of us have a chance in H-E double hockey sticks, you know, of achieving our biggest, boldest, bravest dreams unless we do one thing. Try. And then she talks about how there would be no legends if people hadn't tried. There would be no, you know, no underdogs. And why not? Why not us? Why not us being the one who makes Bernie Sanders president? It's possible. Here's one of the things that's going to make it difficult. This is John Boehner on Meet the Press talking about Obamacare. But, you know, when it comes around, you know, if Bernie catches enough buzz, it'll be about Bernie, too. Here's John Boehner.
Obamacare made it harder for employers to hire people. The economy expands, and as a result, you're going to have more employees because businesses have to. But you can ask any employer in America and ask them whether Obamacare has made it harder for them to hire employees, and they'll tell you yes, because it's a fact. When you look at, yeah, you know why there's more people insured? Because a lot more people are on Medicaid. And giving, you know, we expanded Medicaid in a big way, and giving people Medicaid insurance, it's almost like giving them nothing, because you can't find a doctor that'll see Medicaid patients, and so where do they end up? The same place they used to end up, in the emergency room.
These are all lies. And Chuck Todd, rather than saying, no, excuse me, you lied about the expansion of, you know, it's not the expansion of Medicaid that has accounted for the increase in numbers of insured people in the United States. It's the expansion of Obamacare, people buying in on the exchanges. And employers are not stopping hiring because of Obamacare. He just lied. So I'm going to play Bernie when we come back, and then I'll pick up your calls.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
Oh, and Carly Fiorina. Don't get me started. We'll talk about her when we come back, too. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Okay, Pam Geller, atlasshrugs.com is her website. Obama is a third worlder and a coward. This is the woman who was running the gig down in Texas to try and see if she could get some crazy stirred up so that she could get more publicity for her hate campaigns. She has promoted the idea that President Obama is the love child of his mother and Malcolm X. She says, Obama is a third worlder and a coward. He will do nothing but beat up on our friends to appease his Islamic overlords. Barack Hussein Obama is a Mohammedan. He's not insane. He wants jihad to win. These are quotes from Pam Geller. And the media is taking this woman seriously? This is Anders Breivik, the guy who murdered 77 people, most of them kids, quoted Pam Geller in his rant justifying the murder of liberals in Norway. It's crazy. Anyhow, a couple of quick things I promised you, and then we'll pick up your phone calls. First, this is what Bernie said on ABC this week, you know, over the weekend. Let me just finish my rant about John Boehner. I played the Boehner clip for you. John Boehner goes on Meet the Press, which is supposed to be the big, serious news program. He lies to Chuck Todd. Three lies in a row in maybe four sentences. And Chuck Todd's follow-up question was words to the effect of, so you don't think Obamacare is good for America? Really? This is what pretends to be journalism in the United States of America right now? Meanwhile, I see this is why I'm saying, you know, with regard to Bernie, that it's just, well, let me just, his biggest obstacle is going to be the press. And it's going to be the press because he's not an insider, he's an outsider, and the press loves insiders. John Boehner's an insider. The media is the, you know, I mean, look at the Correspondents' Dinner. I've been to three or four of these things, and as Alan Ratner's guest, and, you know, let's have dinner with the president and 200 of his best friends. And what you get is that it's like show business. So anyhow, here's what Bernie had to say over the weekend on ABC.
Is it really possible for someone who calls himself a socialist to be elected president of the United States?
Well, so long as we know what democratic socialism is. And if we know that in countries in Scandinavia, like Denmark, Norway, Sweden, they are very democratic countries. Obviously, their voter turnout is a lot higher than it is in the United States. In those countries, health care is a right of all people. In those countries, college education, graduate school is free. In those countries, retirement benefits, child care are stronger than in the United States of America. And in those countries, by and large, government works for ordinary people in the middle class rather than, as is the case right now in our country, for the billionaire
class. I can hear the Republican attack ad right now. He wants America to look more like Scandinavia.
That's right. That's right. And what's wrong with that? What's wrong when you have more income and wealth equality? What's wrong when they have middle class in many ways than we do, a higher minimum wage than we do, and they're stronger on the environment than we do. Look, the fact of the matter is we do a lot in our country, which is good, but we can learn from other countries. We have, George, the highest rate of childhood poverty of any major country on earth at the same time as we're seeing a proliferation of millionaires and billionaires. Frankly, I don't think that's sustainable. I don't think that's what America is about.
Bingo. I mean, how do you deal with this? Right? How do you deal with a politician who tells the truth? So, anyhow, David in San Francisco. Hey, David, thanks for calling in. What's up?
Oh, no trouble. Thanks, Tom. I was actually somewhat of an answer to what you were just talking about. You hit them with their own dead weight, just like in judo and karate, use their weight against them. So in this case, with the incident down in Texas, I've been calling up stations down there and asking how market forces are going to deal with all of the lawsuits stemming from this bigoted little conference. The same question can be asked about bad cops in Baltimore, or bad cops in New York, or bad cops around the
world.
Are
you suggesting, David, that there is a basis to litigate against Pam Geller and her buddies?
Well, absolutely. It's very much like shouting fire in a theater. Just as you laid out the scenario of how she basically intimidated and goaded people into a reaction. It's kind of interesting. Have you, if you were to compare this incident against the one that happened in Paris, have you actually seen the cartoons from the Paris? What was it? The Charlie Hebdo?
Yeah, I have.
Yeah, and you remember one of them, the one that was immediately before the shooting, was a picture of Muhammad on his knees, and ISIS was going to cut his head off.
Right.
Now, if you think about the Ten Commandments, it says don't make graven images about God. But in this case, that was not a graven image. That was actually very respectful because they were saying that ISIS was not even religious.
Well,
insult to God.
No, no. To put the graven images thing in context, which is the first commandment, you know, no other gods before me and no graven images, is that the way that many Muslims interpret that is no representation of any living thing, the living things animated by God, or at least any sentient living thing. I mean, you could show trees and things, but not animals, not people, excuse me. And there are some Jews and Christians who also adhere to that. I believe, I don't know if it's the Seventh-day Adventists or if it's the Watchtower people, what's that the Christian religion called? They're into not having pictures, and there are some Orthodox Jews who are not fond of pictures, if my memory and recollection is right.
Yeah,
but you know, the yelling fire in a crowded theater—that's not something that you litigate. That's something you prosecute, isn't it?
It can be, but my point was the difference between her little white trash scenario. She was encouraging people to do graven images, while Charlie Hebdo was actually making a very political statement that ISIS was not religious.
Right,
and that ISIS
is anti-Islamic.
You could say that.
Yeah.
But the reality is that if you look at, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, that ISIS was created by the oil and gas companies to drive drive people off their mineral rights. And that the whole point of it, and Dick Cheney getting the Golan Heights, he's got 150 square miles of mineral rights now in the Golan Heights. And Golan Heights is filled with ISIS, but they're not attacking Dick Cheney's assets. They're driving people off the land so he can do fracking out there.
David, I know nothing about that, Dick Cheney and that. I've never even heard that. Can you give me a reference, source?
Yeah, it's been look in the business pages. You can find it, Wall Street Journal. Just do a basic Google search.
Okay, let me track that down, and if I can find it, I will go off on it, I promise you. It just concerns me that every now and then kind of internet vanishing hitchhiker stories, you know, urban folklore gets onto this program via callers and then, you know, I end up having to clean it up for some time. But, you know, if true, that's pretty damn shocking. So let me find out if it's true. But, David, thank you for the call, and thanks for the information. Gary in Hesperia, California. Hey, Gary.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's on your mind?
On that Pamela Geller thing, you know, I've heard this morning, and I was listening to Stephanie Miller in different places. You know, this woman's been behind so many of these things. Like, remember with the supposed mosque being built within so many miles of Ground Zero a few years back?
Yeah, that was her, and then, her quote, big victory, is that she said that she prevented it. I think it got built anyway, but, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah, it did. It did. It was a of center.
And it was once again, it was Muslims who were working for peace and reconciliation and
right.
integration in the community and you know, basically progressive core progressive values. And that's amazing. I mean, she has.
And then the next thing was the. Oh gosh, I forgot what I was going to say.
On Pam Geller.
Well, let's see here, and then you know, Southern Poverty and Bar Group, what they the Law Center, they list their group as a hate group, right?
Yeah.
I mean, she's just, you know, she's just a horrible person.
But,
and
well,
what she expects is going to happen.
Yeah, I think calling somebody a horrible person is, you know, it's just that's a personal attack, basically. I think her ideology is horrible. I think her tactics are detestable. And, you know, as a person, I don't know, but I'm pretty horrified by all of this. Gary, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. Oh, 10 seconds. Okay. In that case, I'll just, sorry, I missed my time cue there. But this, I mean, there's, okay, the question, A, you know, your thoughts on, you know, what happened in Texas, feel free to call. Two, your thoughts on how do you talk to your kids about Bernie? How do we talk to anybody about Bernie? How do we spread the word? What can be done? By the way, the website is BernieSanders.com, just FYI. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Wow, Shano just confirmed that Dick Cheney and Rupert Murdoch own 150 square miles in the Golan Heights. Amazing. Whew. Amazing stuff going on out there. Okay, welcome back. Carl in High Point, North Carolina, watching Free Speech TV on the Dish Network. Hey, Carl, what's up?
Tom, I recently read an interesting piece, can't remember where it is, but you know, you talked about earlier about, you know, all this anti-government rhetoric, and it was a piece that said basically the South won the Civil War.
Right.
That's going on in our country has been the result of a Southern insurgency to destroy the federal government.
I don't disagree, Carl. That's why I refer to, and I'm going to start increasingly referring to Fox News as the official voice of the Confederate States of America. And I think that
it's really depressing because I've lived in here in North Carolina most of my life, but I grew up in upstate New York, and the people here have never stopped fighting the Civil War. I mean, you know, here I sound like I never lost my northern accent. And I'm repeatedly, even though I've lived here most of my life, called a Yankee.
Right.
You know, and I mean, it is horrible when you see the racism, the voter suppression, you know, the gun culture.
Yeah.
You know, is actually all part of the Southern, the Confederacy. I mean, you know, the hatred of the federal government. And they've succeeded in bringing down the federal government. I mean, you look at our, you know, you look at Congress, you look at, it's become a joke. It's become ineffective. It's become, you know, nothing. It doesn't pass any legislation. It does absolutely. So they've succeeded. The Southern, you know, the Southern insurgency was never put down after the Civil War.
Well, it was for about a decade. And,
yeah, until about 1877, I think.
Yeah, and then in the 1870s, Reconstruction got basically reversed, and the South went back to being the South, and in fact, arguably contaminated the North in a really, really big way, and I don't disagree. I think, you know, we're still fighting the Civil War, or we're still fighting the bizarre. We're still having the same debates. And fights, I suppose, but that we were having in the 1770s, you know, in fact, really 100 years before that, you know, roughly 100 years before that, when slavery started getting really big in North America with, you know, white Europeans bringing over black Africans as slaves. This is, as well as a few white Europeans, this just has this, it's like baked into the DNA of our country somehow. And this is, I've mentioned this before, Carl. Louise and I have been having this debate for decades now. She's of the opinion that Lincoln should have just said, okay, guys, see you later. You know, you want to take half the country? That's fine. You know, you want to have a libertarian little paradise down there with a whole bunch of slaves? Go for it. Whereas I'm more of the opinion that, you know, the horrible thing that happened was Lincoln being assassinated and Andrew Johnson. You know, Lincoln tried to do the same thing Obama did. Let's bring our enemies together. Andrew Johnson, who was not a Republican, who was not opposed to slavery, then became president. And then we had a big problem. Of course, then they tried to impeach him, and then, you know, that was the beginning of that disaster. Carl, thanks for the call. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Scott in Long Beach, California. Hey, Scott, what's on your mind?
Hi, how you doing, Tom? I just want to thank you, first of all, for presenting Bernie Sanders as the legitimate presidential candidate that he is, and not just someone who's entered to move Hillary to the left.
I don't think Bernie gives a rat's ass what Hillary does, frankly. I can't speak for him, but Bernie is about recovering America, you know, reclaiming. This is the book that we're going to give away today, Rebooting the American Dream, you know, by 11 Ways to Rebuild Our Country by me. But this is the book that Bernie wrote a cover letter and we gave to every single one of his 99 colleagues in the Senate. And, you know, it's the 11 basic policy prescriptions. And essentially what it's all about is how to roll back the Reagan Revolution. Yeah, go ahead.
I remember Dennis Kucinich got iced out of the debates, the primary debates, even though he qualified by all the standards and whatever.
Right.
How can we ensure there's going to be an actual debate between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton and any other?
I think there's a foundational and fundamental difference between Bernie Sanders and Dennis Kucinich. Dennis Kucinich was not just viewed by the media as sort of a second-tier candidate or there's a political word for it that doesn't sound so pejorative that is escaping me at the moment. Not a vanity candidate, but, you know, as somebody who represented a relatively small constituency within the Democratic Party. I think that two things have changed. One, the times have changed. That constituency that Dennis Kucinich once represented within the Democratic Party has gotten a hell of a lot larger. But two, and I think more importantly, is that, in my opinion, Bernie is such an articulate spokesman for this stuff. And which is not to say that Dennis wasn't. But, you know, this is a different time and a different person. And Bernie speaks, I say this from experience. Louise and I lived in Vermont for 10 years and went to several Bernie events. And, I mean, you wander around the state, you run into Bernie events because that's what he does every weekend when he goes home. He does town halls. He's the Energizer Bunny. He gets Republicans voting for him. I don't think Dennis Kucinich could have pulled that off, but Bernie did and did a brilliant job of it. I mean, he won 74% of the vote in the last election. You know, Vermont's only about 55-60% at the most voting Democratic. I mean, Bernie picks up Republican votes, and I think that not just the Clinton campaign should be concerned. I think the RNC should be concerned about Bernie. Thanks for the call, Scott. We'll see if with regard to the debates, hopefully there will be debates between Bernie and Hillary and any other Democratic candidates. I think it can only be a good thing for this country for everybody to be on the record and for these issues to be aired, particularly the issues that Bernie Sanders is bringing to the table. Robert in Boston. Hey, Robert, what's on your mind?
A couple of things. Last week, I believe it was Friday, the Globe had a headline below the fold, on the front cover, on the front page, which was quite unfortunate. This woman wrote an article, and the headline was basically that even the voters in Vermont think that Bernie is a front, you know, is a fringe candidate.
That's
an odd take from coming from the Globe, because, you know, we live in a liberal state, and the Globe was a liberal paper. I don't know about now. The article went on inside the paper at some length, and I was so disgusted with the tone of it that I must admit that I didn't read the whole article. But I'm just really the media is treating him as a fringe candidate.
Well, this is how they marginalize people who are not insiders. He's an outsider. And
Tom, I've done as you instructed some time ago, and that was to join the local Democratic town committee and then go on to the caucuses.
Cool.
And
good on you.
To the state convention. But the other thing I wanted to bring up, I count myself as a progressive, an economic populist in terms of what we need to do for the average American. And this is why I support Bernie and Elizabeth Warren over Hillary Clinton. I think where I part with the rest of Democrats and progressives is on immigration. And I point you to an article about the Congressional Research Service just released a study about how immigration has actually caused wages to drop. And this is a common sense thing.
Hold on just a second. That's actually the last chapter in my book, Rebooting the American Dream. You are in a vacuum, in the abstract, you are absolutely right. David Ricardo wrote about this in his 1817 book or pamphlet on wages. And he pointed out that as labor forces increase, wages will decrease because competition for jobs among workers will increase, which means that, the ability of employers to drive down wages is strengthened. That said, immigration into the United States has not been a wage destroyer until we shipped our jobs overseas. And this is the principal meme that the Republican Party is pushing right now, Robert, is to say in particular, to say to black people, it's the brown people who are taking your jobs. And, the reason there's no jobs in Baltimore, the reason there's no jobs in Detroit is because all these illegal immigrants came into the United States and they're taking your jobs. Well, the fact of the matter is that's a lie. What has happened to the jobs that were in Baltimore and Detroit is that they're now in China. And
who pushed through NAFTA and CAFTA and those trade deals?
Right. It's our trade policy that is killing us. And so when you combine a terrible trade policy with Ronald Reagan stopping the enforcement of the laws against employers hiring people who are in this country without documentation, which sets up a sweet thing for employers, because now they have people that they can pay less than minimum wage. They can ignore all the laws and standards because all they have to do is threaten their workers and say, hey, I'll turn you over to ICE if you talk back. I mean, there are even stories of employers who are like raping women and things like this because they can't, they're afraid of being deported. So be very, very careful with that. Robert, thank you for the call.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We have on the table, as it were, you know, a couple of topics that we're going to get back to. And I know there's a lot of people that wanted to call on and, you know, the shooting down in Texas and just the wisdom or stupidity of trying to stir people up, yelling fire in a crowded theater kind of thing. Or is that just free speech? I mean, should we be defending Pam Geller's right to be a hateful bigot? I think that, you know, I don't think that she should have been prevented from doing it. It just saddens me that that's the state of things in this country right now. It's just, it's saddening. Don Siegelman, I mentioned in the first hour, is going to come around to this, and there's just a bunch of stuff going on here. Don Siegelman, this is from the Free Don site. Free-don.org is the website. And this is one of the most appalling, shocking details about prison life at the Oakdale camp. And we spent, Shane and I think you were Googling this thing, and Danielle and Louise and I, we spent like 20 minutes trying to figure out if the Oakdale camp was privatized or not. It's apparently not. It's apparently a federal correctional facility. But maybe the meal service has been privatized. I don't know. I'd like to find out. Because listen to this. This is from this letter about Don Siegelman. One of the most appalling, shocking details about prison life at the Oakdale camp is that they only serve prisoners two meals a day, breakfast and lunch. If an inmate wants dinner, he must purchase it from the in-house canteen. Don usually buys cans of tuna and mackerel for dinner when he has the cash to do it. So much for the belief that prison is a free ride on the taxpayer's dime. You're issued polyester underwear. If you want cotton, it's $15 for shorts and t-shirt, $30 for sweats, $50 for athletic shoes. Everything costs something. Reading glasses are $9. Alarm clocks are $10. A mirror is $2.60. Band-aids, chapstick, mosquito repellent. I mean, you know, whatever. It's like stuff costs money. And now they're making a documentary titled Killing Atticus Finch. And they're crowdsourcing the fundraising for it. And I am really, this is the subtitle, How an Innocent Man Was Politically Assassinated by Some of the Most Notorious Names in American Politics. I'll tell you those names. The principal one of those names is Karl Rove, George W. Bush's consigliere. So, anyhow, number one. Number two, Venezuela has officially declared Bush and Cheney terrorists. Seriously. The president of Venezuela, Nicolas Maduro, has changed the rules. So if an American wants to come into Venezuela, they have to have a visa, number one. And number two, they've created a terrorist list, terrorist watch list. And on that terrorist watch list, they have Ileana Ross Layton, Robert Menendez, Marco Rubio, President George W. Bush, former Vice President Dick Cheney, labeling Bush and Cheney specifically as terrorists. By the way, I don't know when. I think there's an election coming up in Venezuela, isn't there? I'm going to have to look into that. But here's the platform of President Nicolas Maduro. Guaranteed adequate income, right? A basic minimum income for everybody. Build taxable basic income grants into the progressive income tax structure to create a universal social security system that ensures everyone has income for at least a modest standard of living above the poverty line. This, by the way, was proposed by Thomas Paine in his book Agrarian Justice in the 1780s or 1790s. Number two, universal health care. A single-payer national health program to provide free medical and dental care for all. This is the ruling party in Venezuela right now. With freedom of choice for consumers among both conventional and alternative health care providers, federally financed and controlled by democratically elected local boards. Number three, free child care available voluntarily and free for all who need it, modeled after Head Start, federally financed, community controlled. And number four, lifelong public education, free quality public education from preschool through graduate school at public institutions. The kind of stuff Bernie's running on. We've tried to overthrow this country several times, and the billionaires within Venezuela are always aggressively trying to overthrow these so-called leftists who are, you know, this is the centrists in my mind. Did you hear the story of what happened to Sam Brownback, by the way, in Kansas? He of the one of the Reaganistas, and he became governor of Kansas, you know, where the Koch brothers live, and he said, you know, and there was a fairly high state income tax that presumably the Koch brothers had to pay. And he said, and of course, they're not the only rich people in Kansas. And he said, let's cut the taxes on the billionaires and the billionaires. Let's just, in fact, let's do away with them altogether. Taxes on pass through tax, you know, taxes on income that's passed through a corporation, through a sub S corporation, taxes on capital gain. Let's just do away with it. Hundreds of millions of dollars in tax breaks. And now the state is like in this $400 million hole because all that happened was rich people didn't have to pay taxes anymore, and Kansas all of a sudden didn't have a budget to run its country or its state. And so what's Brownback doing now? Is he going to raise the taxes on the billionaires again? No. He's a Republican. Republicans officially represent the billionaires. No, instead, what Brownback is doing is he's cutting funding for schools. Honest to God, you know, tax cuts for the rich, screw the poor people, the kids, the, you know, anybody in need, to hell with them. So this waitress, her name is Chloe or Chloe, I'm not sure how it's C-H-L-O-E, Ho, H-O-U-G-H. It was her last day in Topeka in this restaurant. It's called Boss Hogg's Barbecue. She had already quit. Or given notice or whatever. It was her last day at work. So she didn't get fired over this, although I'm sure she probably would have had it. You know, I mean, it's Kansas. So, you know, Sam Brownback comes in and he buys lunch or dinner or whatever it was. And when she brings him his check, and she took a camera picture of this, scratched out credit card numbers and stuff and put it up on the web. You can see it. When she brought him his check, she put an X through the thing where it says tipped so that he could not give her a tip, and then wrote next to it, please tip our schools. Or she tipped the schools was what she wrote. She later said, I just knew I had to say something or I would regret it. But here's the real numbers. I mean, you know, Sam Brownback giving tax breaks to billionaires. Here's what it costs us every year. The billionaire and multimillionaire class in the United States makes off with $2.2 trillion a year in tax breaks that are not available to average working people. They're not available to you or me. They're only available to very, very rich people who live on stock dividends and investment income or Wall Street banksters. And in fact, this is pretty amazing. The 14 richest people in the United States made more on their investments. And keep in mind, investment income is taxed at a different rate than income from work. It used to be a maximum 15% was the capital gains tax. I think it might be 20% now, but it's still, you know, the maximum income tax rate for if you earn over $300,000 or thereabouts is now 39%, if my memory serves me right. But it's a maximum of 15 or 20% if you're doing capital gains. The 14 richest people in the United States made more money than about $80 billion last year than we spent providing food for people in need of food. 14 richest individuals made more from their investments last year than the $80 billion provided for people in need of food. And these rich folks, they just want more of their entitlements.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's all really quite astonishing. We'll be back. And welcome back, 15 minutes past the hour. By the way, if you get a message when you call in that says that you've gone to voicemail and the box is full or busy or whatever, our phone systems are a little screwy. What it means is that all the lines are busy. So you just, you know, just hang on and try again. John. In Minneapolis, Minnesota, watching Free Speech TV. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that, you know, the time for commiserating is over. We have a person that represents us in Bernie Sanders, and I've already been politicking for him. I spoke to some young people on 13th Avenue here last week on Thursday, the day after, and mentioned his name. I mean, they are ill-informed, and they're not as idealistic as we had a festival here. The May Day Festival is probably one of the largest in the country, and Keith Ellison was there politicking, talking to, we have a lot of Hispanics that live in this district. But I wanted to say, and I think you've pointed this out, and other people have pointed this out, the Progressive Caucus represents, and Bernie Sanders is part of that, represents
Bernie
a
Sanders
lot of people in this country, and a lot of geographic areas that are quite significant, like, for instance, Minneapolis, which, you know, it was an industrial city. It's still a fairly prominent city as far as, you know, the kinds of corporations that are headquartered here. And also, more importantly, it represents some really very far-sighted people. That festival has been going on for 40 years. It started in the 70s, and it was idealistic youth that started that. Plus, they started the co-op system. They're, every one of them except for one is booming. I mean, these are successful co-op businesses, a different model than the corporate model. We need to break out of a corporate stranglehold on this country and bridle capitalism back into serving not just the wealthy, but also the rest of us. We work for that. We deserve that. You know, and I've commiserated
a lot. Tell that to John
Roberts. You've given me the opportunity to say things. But now is the time to, you know, just hit the, you know, it's hard work. It's not real glamorous to go and call on phones and go and, you know, go door to door. You're going to get frustrated and whatnot, but just, don't shut up and keep talking about him, word of mouth. I had some positive and negative feedback about Bernie Sanders, one from a person I respect and I think would even support him. And he said, well, he's so old.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, first of all,
he's 3 years older than Reagan was when he was elected.
Right, exactly. And you know what? There's a lot of us that are middle-aged people that are baby boomers out there. It's not a bad demographic,
yeah.
You know, if we could all get behind him. And also, I don't think age matters. These days, people are in a lot better health. He's very energetic. And I think, you know, he's going to bring these issues to the fore.
Yeah, do you know, John, do you know how old John McCain was when he ran? I don't remember.
But it's, no, I don't.
But it seems to me that he was over 70. But I, you know, I'd have to look it up. Anyhow, John, thanks a lot for the call. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. We've got a serious candidate here and somebody worth getting behind. BernieSanders.com is the website. We'll be right back. Tom Hartman here with you. Interesting. So Sean says, hey, let Tom know that Aramark, the food and clothing service provider for corrections facilities, is under contract to federal as well as state prisons. Still trying to confirm that they contract with Oakdale Camp. Fascinating stuff. So anyhow, Karen in Korea, Maine. Is it pronounced Korea? It starts with a C?
Yes, with a C.
Hey, Karen, what's up?
Well, I just wanted to tell you that I think there has to be a lot more messaging that should go out to all progressive people, whether they're green, independent, or undeclared, that they should go and declare themselves Democrats so that they can vote for Bernie in the primary. That's
yeah.
What I did.
Yeah, if you live in a state with closed primaries, absolutely.
Yes, I do. I declared myself a Green Party member, and I went out that same day and declared myself a Democrat.
Yeah, yeah. I you know, Bernie is waking people up all over the country, and I you know, we can't. I don't want to turn this show into all Bernie all the time, but I think it's big news right now, and it's and I think it will be for the next year and a half. So, Yeah, let's do that. It's interesting, Karen. Thank you for the call. Over the weekend, Saturday, I moderated a panel. There was this conference here. In fact, I mentioned it several times last week. We had a couple of guests on from who were at this event. It was the one and only. I mean, literally the first time SDS from all over the country had gotten together in 50 years. And so it was kind of the 50th anniversary of one of the events around Vietnam. I don't know if it was the Gulf of Tonkin resolution or what it was, but and it was lessonsofvietnam.com is the website. And I moderated a panel in that program on Saturday on reflections on the Vietnam War. And what was astonishing to me was that two of the four panelists, one was relatively apolitical with regard to partisan politics, and the other didn't express an opinion. But two of the panelists, including a guy, one, a person who spent years in prison for being in the Weather Underground, and the other, somebody who was shot at Kent State, just explicitly came out and said, if we want to have peace and justice, if that's, what SDS was founded on, if we want to have peace and justice, we need to take over the Democratic Party. And, there was a bunch of people in the room who were like, oh, no, you don't. That's the establishment. We're not going to, old hippies, right? Are not going to be part of the establishment. But a lot of other people in the room were going, yeah. Those Tea Partiers that took over the Republican Party, we need to take over the Democratic Party. And Howard Dean's old line, the Democratic wing of the Democratic Party, well, now it's the Sanders wing. Ani in Los Angeles, watching online. Hey, is that Ani Zonneveld?
Yes, it is.
Hey, Muslims for Progressive Values. Your ears must have been burning. I mentioned you in the last hour.
Yeah,
or your group.
A little birdie told me.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm calling in regards to the Pam Geller draw a Prophet Muhammad competition. And I want to thank your audience, because it's really heartwarming to hear the response and the feedback from your listeners, and it gives me a lot of hope. So, number one, that's the most important thing to acknowledge. Number two, I wanted to draw attention to the fact that the Southern Poverty Law Center has a list of active anti-Muslim groups, and I think it would be good for your audience to be informed about that. There's an actual movement against Muslims in America, and Pamela Geller herself is funded up to $50 million by seven foundations, and you can find that information on the AmericanProgress.org website and or Google Fear-Inc. Fear Inc. So there's this whole initiative to incite fear and hate towards Muslims.
Wow.
That said, there's money to be made.
Well, apropos of that, Ani, if you can, if there's any, and probably just the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, we have really good connections with them, and what's his name from that group has been on this program many, many times. Mark Potok, yeah, that's right. But if you have other connections, or if you have any contacts for, people who would be good guests on those hate groups, let me know. You said you were going to make another point.
Yes. Last point is that, that said about the anti-Islam, anti-sentiment, it is, as a progressive Muslim, what we're also very careful about that is that, yes, these groups are very hateful, and it brushes all Muslims in the same brush as, intolerant and not fitting of being Americans, because we have very conservative views. Progressive Muslims are very, very clear in that we do not support Sharia law as a form of family or, resolving issues in the United States. We support the law of the land, which is the Constitution, or state laws.
Secular.
So there is a distinction between within the Muslim groups. Just I wanted to make that point. So.
Cool. Okay. And Muslims for Progressive Values website is mpvusa.org, right?
Yes,
Okay, yeah. Cool. Ani, thank you.
Have a good day.
It's great to hear hear from you. So, 20 seconds? Okay. So this is again, the our media constantly is failing us. You know, not putting Pam Geller in context, not putting the event in Texas in context, not putting the whole hate group piece of this in context. It's just like, you know, Chuck Todd asking John Boehner about Obamacare. John Boehner then recites three lies in a row, and Chuck Todd says, oh, so you don't like Obamacare? Really? I mean, it is like the Los Angeles Times saying that Pam Geller is just a woman who's concerned about radical Islam. Really? We'll be back. I mean, all they're missing are the sheets, right? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
They were, after all, called the Christian Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. We'll be there. Minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And where to go? Oh, there it is. Huh. Okay, Julia in Angel Fire, New Mexico. You are on the air.
Hello, Tom.
Hey, Julia.
I just had an idea this morning. I've been really upset with corporate media about the way they've treated Bernie Sanders. And I've been thinking about canceling my subscription to DirecTV for a long time because it just is such a distraction. And there's really so little on that's worth watching. But I thought, what if we cancel those subscriptions and instead gave that money to Bernie Sanders' campaign just to get the attention of corporate media and the rest of the insiders? And I know your screener said that we would hurt free speech TV, but
here's my concern is not that if you cancel free speech TV is under Dish and Direct, and you know, God bless them for carrying the network, and this show is on free speech TV, but you're listening on Sirius right now, but that said, my concern about boycotts, which is essentially what you're talking about, Julia, is that I don't know of any boycotts that have been outside of things like the Montgomery bus boycott. I mean, there have been some local, actually some fairly large events that have been successful, but generally boycotts tend not to be successful. And I doubt that the big cable companies, and I'm assuming that you're talking about, you know, if you had Comcast or Verizon, you would have said Comcast or Verizon instead of DirecTV, that they would notice. I don't think that there's enough of us, and people do want their television, and they do want to be able to see the networks that are available. I think that supporting Bernie is a great idea, and you can do that, at BernieSanders.com. But, signing up, volunteering, going door to door, passing out literature, calling people, waking up your friends, that stuff you can do by and large for free and keep your TV.
I want to ask your question.
Yeah.
How do we get the attention of corporate media? I mean, you know, Chuck Todd, for instance, on Sunday morning. At some point, people have to say enough is enough.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know.
It's happening, Julia. It's happening. 5 years ago, well, maybe 7-8 years ago, I don't remember when the threshold point was, but it's been since I've been doing this show, which has been a little over a decade. It used to be that nobody was pushing back when people like Chuck Todd would have politicians like John Boehner on, and these Republican politicians, virtually always Republican politicians, would just lie through their teeth because that's what Republican politicians have to do. I mean, you know, they only serve the interests of the rich, and nobody was pushing back. Now you got Media Matters, you got Think Progress, you've got all kinds of progressive blogs, you've got, you know, Facebook and Twitter, and in a million ways now, when Chuck Todd allows Boehner to come on his television program and lie, he hears about it. And I guarantee you that he's feeling some heat or hearing some concerns right now that 6, 7, 8 years ago his predecessors never heard. And they're still programming as if, you know, we're not out there. But I think it'll change. I think we're actually in a I think we're the pendulum is swinging back in a more progressive direction, Julia. So
every time I try to make a comment to like MSNBC or anything like that, I just get lost in.
Yeah, they don't solicit feedback.
Computer land. I don't get any. I can't even get through.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm doing it wrong. But,
well, no, I can't help you there. I doubt there is any way to get through. You know, it's a corporation. It's not government. It's not supposed to represent us. And that's why we used to have this thing called the Fairness Doctrine that said that corporations that provide media, in the context of providing media, also have to serve the public good. And that meant real news. Now, Ronald Reagan did away with that in 1987. And then the Telecommunications Act of 96 really put the nail in that coffin. And we no longer have real news in this country. We have infotainment. And so the press is always going to go for the stuff that's going to make them the most money. And I think personally that's one of the reasons why they have all these Republican politicians on, because they know that the people behind the Republican politicians are the billionaires, and the billionaires are going to spend money on those television networks as the campaign rolls along. And they want the billionaire money. It's all about the money. And that's the tragedy. And this is what Bernie is talking about. This is the tragedy of America. Julia, thank you for the call. Jim in Lockport, Illinois. Hey, Jim, how to talk about Bernie?
Oh, you betcha. How you doing, Tom?
Great. What's up?
Well, first off, last week when Bernie announced, you didn't want to take credit for anything that you've done for Bernie, but I have to disagree with you on that. Access to Bernie on Brunch with Bernie is something that's fantastic, and you've allowed the public to really get a one-on-one with the man, and we owe that to you, my friend.
We owe that to Bernie, because as I said on Friday, after Bernie was off, and somebody called in and said, you know, are you going to have to take Bernie down, and what about equal time requirements and all that? And first of all that, I think all those equal time requirements have been blown up, and I said, I would be happy to have Hillary Clinton come on and take calls from listeners without even my asking her a single question for an entire hour every week. And for that matter, I would do the same thing for Ted Cruz. I'd do the same thing for Rand Paul. I'd do the same thing for Ben Carson has announced. Carly Fiorina has announced. By the way, CarlyFiorina.org is hysterical. It says at the top, Carly Fiorina failed to register this domain, so I'm using it to tell you how many people she laid off at Hewlett-Packard. It was this many. And then there's frowny faces, you know, the little icon for, you know, a colon followed by a parenthesis. There's 334 pages of frowny faces. And then at the end it says, that's 30,000 people she laid off, people with families. And what does she say she would have done differently? Quote from Carly Fiorina, I would have done them all faster. So, but in any case, I mean, she's welcome to come on this program. It's just that they won't. They're afraid of answering questions from listeners. And with Bernie, I mean, for a decade now, or however long he's been on this show, you know, we have no basic ground rules other than filtering out people who are abusive or drunk. I mean, if somebody calls up and they're swearing, or if somebody calls up and sounds clearly intoxicated, I'm not going to put them on with Bernie. But that's it. I mean, you know, there's no filters beyond that. So,
and also you had a big question as far as how do we get Bernie out there?
Yeah.
And the most important thing to me is the campaign contribution. And last week I gave you a phone number, and Danielle asked me about it again today. And it's a toll free number, and that's 855-423-7643. And, like I said, the more people that meet Bernie and listen to his no nonsense, way of, going about things, I think things will swing in his direction very quickly.
Yeah, we need to get as many people as possible over to BernieSanders.com. And, you know, it's all that information is there. Jim, thanks for the call. Sharon in Bellingham, Washington. Hey, Sharon, what's up?
Well, Tim, I just had an incident during one of your breaks. My call was about the ism that is rampant in this country, ageism.
Right.
How to talk to people about that. One thing I said, and I don't think Reagan's a good one to compare for age, because you know him and his Alzheimer's, right?
Oh, yeah.
But I did say, well, you know, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is in her 80s and she does push-ups and has a personal trainer. But other than that, I sent out a bunch of emails. And while I was on break, I got an email from a woman who has loved Bernie Sanders for years. She's a professor at a university political science department chair. And she says, we just sent BS a check for $100. We're not quite the Koch brothers, but for Jeff and me, that's big-time spending. I have always loved BS, and though he can't win, he can sure elevate the level of debate. Now, I already tried to send an email to Stephanie Miller when she said he can't win. Word of mouth can go both ways. People have got to stop saying that. But also, how do you answer the ageists?
How do you answer the ageists?
You can't win is driving.
It's different people age in different ways. I saw Norman Lear over, not this last weekend, but the weekend before in Los Angeles. And I had lunch at his house, and he had just done an hour and a half of yoga. I mean, you know, he's 92 years old, and he is sharp as a tack, and just one of the most brilliant people that I've ever known in my entire life. And I have few doubts that, you know, Bernie's going to make it to 90 into his 90s too. And I would just say, you know, that's not a concern of mine. You know, if you're concerned about the fact that Bernie's 73, well, okay, that's your concern. I'm not concerned about that. He is sharp as a tack. Watch him sometime on TV. Is this somebody that we should be concerned about his age? I mean, you know, he should pick a vice presidential candidate to run with him who is as good as he is. And that's why I love this bumper sticker, Sanders Warren 16. I mean, what a ticket, right? But, you know, to assuage anyone's concerns about that. But, you know,
he can't win.
Pardon?
This thing of people, all these people are saying, well, even though he can't win.
Well, anybody who says that, what you want to do is now you can use Reagan, because that's what everybody said. That's what I was saying. That's what Democrats were saying. We wanted Ronald Reagan in 1980 to be the candidate. We did not want George Herbert Walker Bush to be the candidate, because George Herbert Walker Bush was making sense and Reagan sounded like a crazy man. And he had this reputation as Ronnie Reagan. You know, it was this crazy guy who had destroyed the public school system in California. And, look at the damage that he did. But on the other hand, he got elected. So, there's no shortage of presidential candidates where people have said, oh, there's no way he can win. Harry Truman in 46, I think. Yeah, 46. Another one? 40, no, it must have been 48. Yeah. Sharon, thanks for the call. I agree. No one should be saying
that. You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
And in 2008, when he ran, John McCain was 72 years old. So there's another thing that you can say, you know, he's the same age as John McCain. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Morris in Long Beach, California. Hey, Morris, what's up?
Hey, Professor, how you doing? Listen, a lot of things going on. I'm excited about the situation with Julian Assange, that he's now going to be able to challenge that court order summons there. And if he beats that, you know, I'm really praying that'll open up a whole lot of discussion about some things that we haven't even been introduced yet. Yeah. I also would like to know if you think Bernie Sanders will march with Black Lives Matter. That's all he's got to do. Just march with Black Lives Matter and the SEIU, get out there and talk about $15 an hour. He'll be cool. This is a very smart class you got going on here, and I realized I had to do something different. You know, reading and being smart is not enough anymore. So I went out and I became a deputy. No, not the ones with the gun and the badge, but the ones that get people registered to vote. I was marching with the Black Lives Matter, but those are statements, but it doesn't look like anything is changing. And a lot of people may not be registered to vote, because this is what I found out when I took the class. The number one powerful group in terms of turning things around in this country overnight, 18 to 25 year olds, 18 to 20, they rule along with the seniors, but the 18 to 25 year olds, but they are also the ones that don't vote. And regarding my boy Dan Siegelman, I'm voting for him for president because he's not an insider. Anyway, but if he's not on the ballot, I got to go with Bernie. And you know, Dan Siegelman was convicted by a guy named Mark Fuller. And I was listening to your boy Brad Freeman, who's on my album of I'm Voting, and they got Mr. Fuller on tape beating down a woman in a hotel room like a pimp. Unbelievable. How did this guy get off, you say? Misconduct of federal prosecutors and courtroom irregularities, the relationship between the military and the civilian powers in Alabama. Bingo.
Wow. And let's not forget Karl Rove. I mean, the woman who prosecuted Don Siegelman's husband was the campaign manager for the guy that Don Siegelman beat and then lost to for governor. Bob Riley, and her name is Laura Canary. She was the federal prosecutor, and her husband, his best friend from childhood, was Karl Rove. And, you know, so the story, if you go to free-don.org and dig into it, it is one insanely ugly story. It is just an insanely ugly story. So with regard to Julian Assange, Sweden's going to allow him to appeal, but that doesn't mean that the United States isn't going to try and kidnap him if he walks outside that embassy, is it? Or for that matter, the British government?
I disagree. The United States would not try to kidnap Julian Assange. The United States of the CIA would assassinate him.
Well, I think we're trying to get him deported. You know, are the British and the British will go along with the deportation, won't they?
Even if he doesn't
have a Sweden problem, he's got a USA problem. It's my point.
He's got a USA, but the USA is like a proxy. The USA is dependent upon Sweden being their proxy. If Sweden no longer the proxy, now all he has to do is worry about an assassin's bullet. That's it, which is not a minor thing. But my boy Nicolas Maduro down in Venezuela, this guy's something else, ain't he, Professor?
Yeah. Yeah, I've got to learn more about him. It seems like he's a good, solid progressive. I don't know that much about Venezuelan politics. Watching the Hugo Chavez show over the years has always been entertaining and interesting. But, yeah. Morris, thank you very much for the call. And thanks for listening to KPFK. Great to hear from you. 10 minutes before the hour. We'll be right back. John Harmon here with you, and Rob in Long Island. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I wanted to you kind of gave me a lot to unpack, and I think there was still a very important point that you missed when we were talking about the prison issues, and that's that a lot of these, you know, you were talking on the best of the rest of the news about debtors' prisons and you know, fines that turn into punitive, you know, incarceration, that kind of stuff.
Right.
The other part of that that you're missing is that once those people are incarcerated, once they get into prison, then they're forced to work for corporations for sometimes as little as a few cents an hour.
Right. Right. In many cases. And prison labor. I mean, again, you know, who's taking our jobs?
And it's you know, you're talking about that and you were talking earlier about the thing with the federal prison and the two meals a day. I mean, what happened to cruel and unusual punishment?
Well, we need here's the bizarre thing, Rob. You know, Hillary Clinton actually gave a very thoughtful and in-depth policy speech a couple of days ago in which she called for an end to the era of mass incarceration. Mitt Romney came out and said, there's no mass incarceration in the United States. Can you believe that? I mean, this is...
Well, Mitt Romney also said corporations are people, so it's obvious where his bread is.
Yeah, there you go. It's amazing. It's just absolutely amazing. Rob, thanks for the call. Excellent point. David in Sacramento. Hey, David, what's up?
How you doing, Tom?
Great.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
You don't get very many calls in Sacramento, but I'm glad that you got mine. So here's the thing. You heard Carla Fiorina, and then, you know, she's and then Carson. What is wrong with this lady that she can try to go on the clown bus thinking that she can go ahead and vote, try to run for president and run against Boxer? And then also, in case you didn't know, she was running some nasty, nasty, filthy ads against Boxer. And Boxer was hardly even running any nasty ads against her.
Right.
This goes to show, and this guy Carson, who is anti-gay, who in their right mind would want to vote any of these idiots, you know, or the clown bus, you know, for any purpose at all? Who in their right mind would want to vote for these people? I mean, you've got to be
this
crazy.
You're talking about my theory of the Republican Party, that you've got the Republican overlords, you've got the billionaires who really, you know, own the show. And then you've got the paid shills for the billionaires. Now, in this case, Carly Fiorina is one of the billionaires herself, or at least a multimillionaire. She spent tens of millions of dollars of her own money, I believe, in the last election when she was running against Boxer. and you got the paid shills, and then you've got the suckers. And in answer to your maybe not rhetorical question, David, who would vote for them? The suckers. They will figure out the wedge issues. We'll use abortion for these people. We'll use religion for these people. We'll use guns for these people. We'll use fear of Muslims or Islam or whatever, ISIS, for these people. We'll use, an awful lot of us fear and hate. Oh, and we'll use racism for these people. And, you know, we'll shout out to the racists. And that's how they succeed in, this is how these very wealthy people, or people who simply represent the interests of wealth, like Carly Fiorina, this is how they get, votes. Now, she's never won a political office, to the best of my knowledge. I think, everybody in California saw her coming, her and Meg Whitman. They both thought that they could, who was running for governor, who thought she could buy her way in. But, it is incredible that Carly Fiorina is running. It's really incredible. David, thanks for the call. Bobby in Kaiser, Oregon. Hey, Bobby, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. Sure. I was wondering, do you believe that John Boehner knows that he's lying and that he's just getting out there lying?
Or yes.
Does he really believe this stuff?
No, he knows that he's lying. He has to know that he's lying.
How can you get away with that?
I don't think it's a matter of getting away with it. The politicians have been lying since there have been politicians. I'm sure of that. But I think that I think the Republican Party for the last, basically since Reagan, when the Republican Party went insane, when the Republican Party decided that they were going to be the party that hated America, that hated our government, this intellectual dissonance was created, this cognitive dissonance between we hate our country, we hate the government, and we want people to vote for us. We want political power. We want to control the government. And that dissonance, that cognitive dissonance, that space that was created there was the perfect kind of space for sociopaths to step into. People who not only can lie with facility and ease, but actually love to lie with facility and ease. Most people have a hard time when they lie. Most people feel uncomfortable when they lie. Most people feel guilty, frankly, when they lie. But sociopaths don't. Sociopaths just, because they don't view other people as actual human beings. Sociopaths don't, they don't have empathy. So when you look at the Republican Party and you look at John Boehner and you look at this Republican budget, for example, that's going to cut billions of dollars from programs that are literally keeping poor people alive in this country and that are allowing working people to make it. That's going to cut those programs and that's going to funnel another $2 trillion to billionaires through tax cuts and things. You look at what they're doing, and there's no way to describe this other than sociopathy. So just like when Reagan changed the compensation rules, the IRS compensation rules for corporate executives, saying that they could be compensated with stock options, suddenly their priorities shifted, and they became concerned about how much money they could make with their stock options rather than what was best for the company, the community, the customers, the workers, which the CEOs pre-Reagan always used to, care about and be concerned about. That in that same way, our politics have shifted in large part because of the Supreme Court and their decision that money can come into politics. The billionaires can buy their favorite politicians. And John Roberts affirmed that last week in the Supreme Court, saying that politicians should be responsive to their supporters, John Roberts' phrase, actually in a Supreme Court decision, as opposed to their constituents. And constituents is all of us. The supporters are the 500 people who gave $1 million each to John Boehner, whatever it is, whatever the amount might be. So I think that what we're seeing is sociopathy on parade. And John Boehner's, in my opinion, an example of it. That's why I think he knew that he was lying, and he doesn't care. Bobby, thanks for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com, America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com, Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartmann.com.
This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. The liberals in the cities? Oh, jeez. Chris Matthews? Oh, Chris Wallace over at Fox News was asking Donna Edwards, are the liberal policies causing problems involved? Well, you can't look around you and see that our trade policies have destroyed this country. The 35 years of Reaganism has destroyed this country. It's, I don't know. It's astonishing. Okay. Billy in Wimberley, Texas. Billy, you wanted to go off about the South? Are you suggesting
people in the South as being insurgents and that they are still fighting the Civil War? That's a lie, and you know it. What boggles my mind.
So wait a minute. You're telling me that your state, whose governor has talked about secession, or whose former governor has talked about secession on multiple occasions, is not. What was the Civil War about? Wasn't it about secession?
It was about secession. That's not really the point. You know what Rick Perry said in a off moment, pretty much in a jest. Y'all take and misrepresent and talk about the South wanting to refight the Civil War and reinstitute slavery. That's just a bald-faced lie.
Yeah. Well, you can think so, Billy, but I lived in the South for 15 years,
it's
13 years.
Audience.
I lived in Atlanta for 13.
Wants to reinstitute slavery.
Can you turn my mic up a little bit? Thank you. Billy, I lived in Atlanta for 13 years. I know white people in the South who would very much like the South to go back to the way it was pre-1860. And so do you, I'm sure.
It's slavery.
And I'm sure that you know those same people. Yes.
Ridiculous. You should.
Okay, I would submit to you, Billy, that we still have slavery, and it's called prison labor.
Not telling the truth, and with really beautiful flowery statements about equal rights.
You going to tell the truth about prison labor? About mass incarceration?
What about prison labor?
Is that not slavery? I mean,
you don't break the law, you don't go to jail.
Oh yeah.
Right. I think that the minorities that are in jail now.
Billy, are you trying to tell me that when African Americans are 8 times more likely to go to prison for smoking pot than white people, even though white people smoke more pot than African Americans, even on a per capita basis, not as a percentage or either however you calculate it, you're telling me that that's just fine?
We're not talking about pot smokers. You just said that only people who broke the law go to jail. And in that mob in Baltimore, those are the kind of people we're talking about. You don't want to.
No, the kind of people we're talking about are the white racists in the South who still want to be fighting the Civil War. That's where you opened this conversation.
Statement. I thought you were educated. That's just insane for you to say that,
Billy. You know, I'm not personally insulting you. And I think that when you personally insult me, you actually diminish the potency of your argument. Just, you know, if I may respectfully suggest, if you want to debate, keep it to the issues.
Fair enough.
Okay. So what's your evidence? You know, if you look at poverty in the South, if you look at racism in the South, if you look at segregation in the South, if you look at the aggressive efforts by Republicans in the South to prevent people of color from voting and poor people, how can you say that this isn't some echo from the Civil War or from that era? Let's say from the early 18th century or the early 19th century.
Okay, let me answer you. The people in Baltimore are disadvantaged. The people in New York City and in Chicago that are in poverty, because of Democratic policies that they've been living off for the last 50 or 100 years. Those people are disadvantaged, too. It has nothing to do with the South wanting to rise.
What is the Democratic policy, Billy, that causes poverty from white West Virginia to black downtown Baltimore? What is the Democratic policy that is causing that poverty?
All the programs that they put into place to destroy the black family and to destroy anybody's incentive to go out and make a living.
Well, you know, it's not just black people, Billy. There's more white people on welfare than there are black people, and there are more white people who are getting federal benefits than there are black people. And the biggest recipients of federal benefits, by the way, are people who have a net worth of over $100 million. They receive the largest share. We spent a total of about 300
black people.
I beg your pardon?
There are more black people in this country killing black people than white people killing black people.
It's more white people killing white people. There's a circular logic day.
Black people killing black people.
That's because they're in proximity to each other, the same way white people kill white people because they're in proximity to each other. All you're doing is acknowledging that we live in an apartheid state.
That's ridiculous.
You just said it.
In the books, man.
You just pointed it out.
No, that's a false argument. You're taking a false.
So what you're saying to me that black people in Baltimore are going to black neighborhoods in Detroit to kill people because they like to kill black people, whereas this makes no sense, Billy.
Black people kill black people because they feel like they're entitled.
No, people kill people because they're near them, and the majority of people who are killed, by the way. Tend to be people who know each other. You know, you've got domestic violence is one of the most dangerous things in the United States. You know, more people. Billy, I think we've both had our say here. Robert in Lincoln, Nebraska, you want to disagree with me about Venezuela. This is National Disagree with Tom Day. You want to disagree with me about Venezuela. What's up?
Well, hey, how are you doing, Tom?
Fine.
First of all, huge fan. I'm available as they come. I'm sorry?
I said, but
no, I'm not there yet.
Okay.
I'm a progressive. I'm as liberal as they come. Democrat, you know, to as much as I can be in a state as Nebraska. But here's the issue. Okay. And you have acknowledged this. You have mentioned that you got to do a little more research on Maduro. But Chavez and Maduro have done to Venezuela.
Okay, hang on just a second, Robert. Maduro, just for people who don't know what we're talking about, Maduro is the current president of Venezuela who was elected last year and who was there anybody between him and Chavez? I don't think so. He's the guy who followed Chavez, right?
There was.
Okay.
Right. I'm a Venezuelan American, by the way.
Okay.
Came to this country when I was a kid.
All right.
But I still have family back there. Okay, Chavez and Maduro did what Bush did to our country here.
What, they started a war someplace?
No, they squandered. Okay, Bush squandered the surplus that we had. Chavez and Maduro squandered the huge oil revenues that Venezuela had.
But see, here's the difference, Robert. Bush squandered America's wealth on somewhere between $3 and $10 trillion on illegal wars, killing people and destroying people around the world. Chavez and Maduro squandered the, if you want to use that word, the oil revenue that their country gets, the same way that Norway is squandering the oil revenue it gets by giving their people health care and education and housing.
No, I'm sorry. I disagree with you on that. Because all you need to do is look at where Venezuela is today versus where it was some time back, okay? And
you mean when the oligarchs were running the country and there were death squads, you know, right-wing death squads going around killing people for...
Okay. Well, now there are left-wing death squads. Okay, you have people on the streets killing others.
So you've got. Wait a minute. Let me get this straight, Robert. There are people in Caracas or in Venezuela who are shooting other people because they want them to have free health care and free access to college education.
No.
Okay,
no,
then
no,
what's a left-wing death squad?
Okay, the left-wing death squads are those people that because you disagree with the government, come over and shoot you.
I think that's not left wing.
What is that? They follow the left wing.
You're taking my argument and just putting one space of removal into it. You're saying that people who agree with a government that wants to give people free education and health care people who disagree with that government are the ones who should be shot, and thus the left. Okay. Robert, we're out of time. Thank you for the call. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And Robert, thank you for the call. And respectfully, I do need to learn more about Venezuela. And I, you know, we should have this conversation again. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Marcia watching Free Speech TV in Englewood, Florida. Hey, Marcia, what's up?
Hey, I have a thought for how to explain to the 18 to 25-year-olds why it might just be a better idea to vote in a person who is older rather than somebody young like Rand Paul. And that is that your best bet of getting a real true idea of where we need to go, where we've been, is somebody that's already been there, that experienced everything, that lived through the time where we didn't used to know what the word organic food meant. We didn't know that there could be anything other than a public education, where the prisons weren't owned, you know, by private entities. Somebody that's lived through all of that knows the good and bad of all of that and is willing to fight for the people to not take us down the wrong road, that we can all have a share in this government, not just the very, very wealthy or not just. Yeah, Democrat and Republican doesn't mean anything anymore.
Actually, it means a lot, Marcia. The Democrats, the Democrats, by and large, are holding, standing up for, and holding positions that have to do with the lives of working people in this country. And the Republicans are absolutely trashing working people in this country and doing everything they can to help the rich get richer.
Yeah, but still, there's still.
You can't. Yeah, but
they have fallen in line, you know. If you can't beat them, join them, and they've joined them in taking the donations from big corporations. Bernie Sanders has not. He has not anywhere in his lifetime taken money from big corporations. He has depended solely and supported solely the people. He is definitely a populist candidate. And this is what I think has to be stressed among the younger generation. They don't know what it's like to have a president that actually stood up for the people. They don't know what it was like to live under FDR's New Deal. And unless you've lived it, you have nothing to weigh, the good from the bad.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to trust somebody that has lived it. That would be my argument to a young person.
Who says Bernie's 73 years old? I'm concerned about voting for a guy that age. That turn that around. This is you know what Reagan said is I'm not going to use the youth and inexperience of my opponent against him.
Reagan wasn't 100% wrong in absolutely everything. I didn't like the man, but
that was a good line.
You know, he killed our unions.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there were some things he did right. He didn't do right by taking away free education. But
no.
There were a few things that he did, very few things that he did right.
Yeah. Yeah, no, my point is, and Marcia, thank you for the call, is dealing with this issue of age, I don't think it's an issue. I really don't. John McCain back in 2008 was 72, Bernie is 73 now. So, which means that John McCain is like over 80 now, right? Or no, he's pushing 80. But Bernie's only 73. He's a young guy. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, and Catherine in Monterey, California. Hey, Catherine. What's up?
Oh, hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
Just great.
Good. Well, you know, I just wanted to point out that sometimes the news cycle goes
from one topic to another so quickly that we kind of forget to follow up on things that we were talking about. Like, for instance, last summer when we had the news that Staples was going to partner with the post office and pay minimum wage to workers that were going to do the work of postal workers.
Right.
And this kind of came up when you were talking about boycotts again, that you really aren't a fan of boycotts. But the reason why Staples backed off of that deal was because the teachers' unions, who spend a lot of money.
Was it the Postal Workers Union, you mean, Catherine?
Yes.
Yeah.
And also the teachers' unions.
Huh.
California Teachers Union, National Teachers Association, all announced that they were going to boycott Staples, and they spend, that's like a major budget for Staples, is the school supplies that those teachers buy at Staples, and they backed off of the deal.
Yeah. I don't know the details of that. You may well be right,
yeah.
But that speaks, Catherine, not to the power of boycott, but to the power of unions.
Well, yes, the unions did it in solidarity, but the
right, and I'm totally
against their bottom line, you know.
Yeah, but I'm totally with you on that. In fact, that's why we need more unions. Because unions are, you know, organized people. And if you're going to go up against organized money, which is a corporation or a group of billionaires, you need organized people. And that's one of the reasons why the Republican Party has been working, you know, ever since 1935 to destroy unions in the United States and has had some significant victories in destroying unions. Taft-Hartley in 1947, the Republican sweep in 2010, all these laws, all these bills made into laws. By the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, you know, that flip states from collective bargaining states to right to work for less states and all that kind of thing. But anyhow,
it has the power of the boycott. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Your point was made, and I can't disagree with it. Thank you, Catherine. You're right, Keith. Keith in Landrum, South Carolina. Hey, Keith. Bernie.
Hey, Tom. Hope you're having a great Monday.
I am.
I'm a boat rocker. Obviously, you're a boat rocker. I'm on the RNC mailing list, and every time I get a donation request, I email them back, and they're saying, why do you want to get my donations? You're already saying you're going to cut 20% of my SSDI payments, so I dig them that way.
Mm-hmm.
But with Bernie, we have... you're talking about teaching our children. I'm trying to teach the children of the Republican friends that I have on Facebook, and I keep going back to the Progressive Change Institute survey that you keep talking about, where over 60% of all these talking points can say every American wants everything we want. So are my Republican friends saying, oh, we need to say that $1 equals one vote? We need to reduce a college education payments that people are paying. All these other points that are, you know, there's a whole list of them.
Right.
And I think that's important to bring up and say, oh, you're opposing all these things, and Bernie supports all of them. He's not a socialist. He is for social programs.
He's a Democratic socialist.
Social programs.
He describes himself as a democratic socialist, which is how Norway, Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Germany, France would describe themselves, by and large.
Well, this is a way to educate our conservative friends that discuss the issues.
Yeah, interesting. Excellent point. Keith, thank you for the call. Larry in Lancaster, California. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, Tom. How come you won't vote for Dr. Carson or Carolina?
I wouldn't vote for Carly Fiorina because she represents big business and you know her interests are clearly aligned with those of the wealthy and powerful. I wouldn't vote for Ben Carson because I think he's a nutball. He's said just some vile things about President Obama and about others. I just think he's wrong on the policies. I wouldn't vote for either one of them because the policies that they would take is more Reaganism, and it's Reaganism that's destroying this country.
No, it's not Reaganism. It'd be racist not to vote for him or sexist. You say we're racist because we don't like Obama, but it's because we don't like his policies.
Larry, who's the shill who turned you into such a successful sucker?
I'm not a sucker. You're a moron.
Yeah. See, now I just broke my own rule. I'm sorry, Larry. I didn't mean to insult you. You're right. I was a moron for insulting you.
When you call us suckers, you're insulting us, and it's not bothering you.
Yeah.
But I'm tired of you guys saying we're racist because we don't like Obama politics.
I have not said, Larry, that you are a racist because you don't like Obama's politics. But what I'm curious about is what about Obama's politics do you not like?
One thing is Obamacare. I'd much rather go back to the insurance I used to have.
So you'd like to have an insurance company be able to cut you off when you get sick?
No, I think I have pre-existing problems, and I've had insurance.
No, you didn't. I'm telling you, before Obamacare, if you got sick,
California,
you may have had insurance. You may have thought you had insurance.
No, I used it. California had pre-existing health care insurance before Obama was even president.
Oh, okay. So you're in favor of the government mandating that health insurance companies can't kick you off if you have a pre-existing condition. You're just opposed to it being available to anybody outside of the state where you happen to live.
There's a government doing it. It was California's.
California is a government, Larry.
California, they're private insurance.
Right, that was regulated by the state of California, and you liked the way that it was regulated, and all Obamacare did was that for the rest of the United States, but apparently that's not a good thing. Larry, thank you for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
We'll be right back. 28 minutes past the hour. For the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Elaine in Taos, New Mexico. Hey, Elaine, thanks for listening to KVOT. What's up?
Hi, thank you. I just want to speak real quickly, just as an American single parent.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a retired special ed instructor. Lost my job through a workers' comp injury. I've raised a handicapped autistic child as a single parent for 25 years.
Wow.
When I started taking care of him and planning for his future, there was a law that said that if you own property, the handicapped individual does not have to be institutionalized upon the death of the care provider. So I deliberately purchased a mobile home for no property taxes and low space rent and paid it off in 20 years. Now my son's 25. In 2008 or 9, I think it was, the federal law changed, and it was to, upon the decease of the family member that's caring for an incapacitated adult, all assets are seized and claimed by the federal government for the future care of the child.
Mm. Yeah.
And, for me, that was just what broke the camel's back, and I stopped believing that the political system that we have today is viable and honest.
Yeah.
I don't think that. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I was interrupting you, Elaine. I was going to say. I made that same horrible discovery. My three brothers and I did when my mom got Alzheimer's. I mean, she was in pretty bad shape, and if we were going to put her in a nursing home, which we never did, my brother Stan took care of her until she died. And his wife, and boy, did they, I mean, that's a tough job. But the thing that we discovered was that if we were going to put her in a home and ask Medicaid to pay for it, or even Medicare, she was over 70, in fact, she was over 80, then we would have to first bankrupt her. I mean, we would have to, she could have no assets. We'd have to sell the house that she and Dad had lived in all their lives. We would have to sell all their possessions. And we would not only have to bankrupt her, but we would have to bankrupt her 2 years before we applied for the, if my recollection is correct, the Medicaid payment. And even then, it might be something that could be, you know, clawed back from the government. So yeah, these are the changes that by and large conservative politicians, mostly Republicans, have put into the law, into the Social Security code, into the Medicare code, into the Medicaid code over the last 40 years, and they're wrong. They're just wrong. I agree with you, Elaine.
Right. And my experience, I have been living on my own since 14 years of age. Mm. I have never in my life been on welfare.
Yeah. I've been living on my own since I was 16, although I was on unemployment for a few months when I was maybe 19 or 20. But other than that, but see, also, you know, that goes along with a fairly large dose of white privilege.
Well, I'm white, but I don't think I've ever been privileged. That's
yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
But I do have to say that, you know, years ago I was talking about Bernie Sanders. I loved when he stood up in the Senate and talked about the 1%. I don't think that the politicians are capable in the current political environment of being honest without compromise. And I think that that's why a lot of young people, you know, don't even believe in politics. And I think that, you know, I just don't know an answer. I really don't. I mean, I believe that Bernie Sanders would be an excellent president. But, like you say, it's the Republicans that are in the House.
Right.
It's the Republicans that are running everything. So,
Elaine, we need to create a movement. And creating a movement around somebody, not because of the color of their skin or because of their gender, but creating a movement around somebody because of the policy positions that they hold and who will surround themselves with people who hold those policy positions, that's something that's really important and very doable in the United States. And that's what I believe Bernie Sanders is trying to do right now, is start a movement, not necessarily a all-around Bernie movement, but a movement to say, expand Social Security, don't cut it. Expand Medicare so that it covers everybody in the United States, so it becomes a national, you know, single-payer health care system. Expand, you know, increase the minimum wage. Expand workplace protections. You know, these are straightforward things that the majority of Americans actually agree with. Save the post office. Stop the privatization craziness. Get the money out of politics. Get the billionaires out of politics. Or change the rules of the game so that a billionaire has as much influence on politics as you or me. You know, these are the things that I think the movement is already there. I think most Americans are there and they're ready to go. And so, anyway.
I just hope they can get the money. But I do have a question for you, and this is something, you know, I moved to New Mexico because of the tax hikes and the rent hikes and all that in California. I sold my place, that dream for my son, and now I'm a renter. When I moved to New Mexico, you know, I lost my job, I lost my health insurance, I had to start fresh. So because my son is severely disabled, I had to transfer his Social Security disability. I've worked forever and paid into Medicaid and Medi-Cal and all that, and I'll never see it. So I don't have any regrets that my son receives those benefits. He's getting something I probably never will.
Right.
But
right.
When I came to New Mexico, I was shocked to find, and I even kind of even feel a little fear even saying this, but I was shocked to find that in order for a family member to receive Social Security, they also have to qualify for Medicaid and food stamps. And so that means they have to be low income.
Right. Yeah, it's a variation on the bankrupt your mom before you can, you know, get any coverage for her. Elaine, thank you for the call. Wes in Lecanto, Florida. Am I saying it right, Wes?
Yeah, that's right. Some people say Lecanto, but I'm from the South. We don't use the broad A very much down here.
Okay.
As far as the guy from Texas, I'm a trucker. I run basically the state of Florida. I used to run over the road. But every day I see prison work gangs on the side of the road, majority African-American. Yes, it's free labor. Yeah. I don't care what anybody says.
Yeah.
Like I say, I see it every day. I've already seen a couple of gangs today.
Yeah.
So, you know, the guy in Texas, you know, they're using it as if this is Rick Scott's state. We know who Rick Scott pulls for.
Yeah, yeah. Same thing. There you go. Wes, thanks for the call, and thanks for listening to Sirius. Andy in San Pedro, California. Hey, Andy. Andy?
Good. Yes.
Right. You don't like unions?
Well, here's my beef with the unions. They talk about being the champions for the people. I'm in the office supply industry. I work for a small independent dealer. I've worked for the big box stores. Every time I call on a union, they're all buying from one of the big box stores. Yet, anytime a union needs any printing, they will only go to a union house so that the union bug is put on the printed material. Why is it they'll go to for the printing on that, but the office supplies, they don't support the local independent dealers within their neighborhoods, within their communities, to keep the money there?
Andy, if that's what's happening, I would suggest that what you're describing is a failure of democracy. It's the same thing that we're seeing at the state and federal level, and particularly at the federal level that Bernie talks about. Here we have, for example, all over Washington, D.C., these Smithsonian shops, you know, where you can go into the Air and Space Museum and you can buy a little, you know, plastic model of the Challenger or something like that, and it's made in China. Why is it not made in the United States? You know, we have this Buy America First bill, a law that was passed in 1935 by Franklin Roosevelt, but Reagan started issuing waivers like crazy in the 80s on it, and now pretty much everything is waivered on it. So our federal government is buying stuff that's not made in the United States. Unions are democracies, and I mean, it's just that simple. And if a majority, if over 50% of the members want something to happen, whatever that may be, hey, we only buy, you know, we no longer buy our Post-it pads from Staples, then all they have to do is have a vote. I would guess that, you know, the membership is not sufficiently incensed about where the office supplies are coming from, and so that's why, you know, nothing's happening with that. Just like apparently in the United States, we're not sufficiently incensed about the fact that everything, you know, practically everything, even in federal offices, I mean, down to the computers and the furniture, was made in someplace other than the United States. Now, you know, I think you could argue that union democracies are actually less corrupted than our federal democracy, because the Supreme Court has not said that a billionaire can control individual union members or tell them how to vote or tell them what they must do or whatever. I mean, it's just you work there. Hey, you get to vote, and or you're a member of the union. Hey, you get to vote. Whereas at the federal level, you've got individual billionaires who are basically replacing the voices of individual workers in a union. And, you know, because in a union, if you're going to have an election in a union about who's going to be the new boss or who's going to this or that or the other thing, the unions have very specific rules. They vary from union to union on how people can campaign, how money can be handled. It all has to be transparent. There are very, very rigorous regulations on unions, particularly on their political activity that were put in place in 1947 by Taft-Hartley and are still there. So, you know, your beef, I guess, is with democracy. And I'm, you know, you're right. Democracy doesn't always work exactly the way we'd like it to work. But frankly, in my opinion, we need more democracy in the United States. Small d democracy. We need more democracy, not less. And that means more unions. And that means a government that is responsive to its people rather than, as John Roberts said last week, its supporters. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back in 15 just a minute. 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Before the hour. And Robert watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV in Greenville, North Carolina. Hey, Robert, you're on the air. Carly Fiorina?
Yeah, Carly Fiorina, Tom, is going to be the attack dog for the Republicans so they don't look like they are sexist.
Or misogynists, yeah. I agree.
And also, fast track has to be really bad for the country. If the Republicans agree with something Obama wants, it's got to be in favor of the billionaires.
Yeah. Yep.
And one other thing I wanted to ask you, did you happen to catch Bernie on the O'Reilly show about a week or two ago?
No. I haven't watched O'Reilly in years. I'm sorry.
Well, I just watch it until I get aggravated, and then I switch.
Okay.
I mean, and I get crazy. If I can't watch it but so long. But jokingly, Bernie told O'Reilly he couldn't be on the ticket with him for VP. Jokingly.
Right.
And O'Reilly was very arrogant and sarcastic with his reply. He said, fat chance of that happening, and if it did, it would be the only chance for you to win.
Oh, you're kidding.
I'm serious. And it was in a real nasty, you know how Fox TV.
Yeah.
Fox TV is outfoxing us. We need some pre-TV for the people that don't know what's going on and are brainwashed easily,
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's about it. I'm all for Bernie. I love him, but it's going to be a hard road. But we need to really take care of business.
Yeah, I'm with you. Robert, thank you for the call. Lee in Rhea, Missouri. Hey, Lee, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's up?
How you doing there, Tom?
Good.
Hey, it's Ray, Missouri. Everybody
Ray.
Makes that mistake.
Thank you.
That's fine. Hey, I was calling in. You had discussed with a gentleman earlier about fracking over in the Golden Heights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I had looked in that earlier, and they had just passed some laws over there in Israel that allowed that, and they were doing a little blockage. And I can't for the life of me, and it'll be something for you to backtrack. There's a oil company out in the East Coast that handles all that.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the members of that oil company is Dick Cheney.
Right. The company's called Genie Energy. It's listed on the New York Stock Exchange. And it says, this is Michael Kelly writing in Business Insider, says Genie Energy, which is advised by former Vice President Dick Cheney and whose shareholders include Jacob Rothschild and Rupert Murdoch, will now have exclusive rights to a 153-square-mile radius in the southern part of the Golan Heights. And, you know, this was seized during the Six-Day War in 67 and annexed in 81. And so I'm surprised that I hadn't heard about this before, because this was from 2013, actually. So this is
right.
2 years
it's
ago.
It's just another example of why we go to war.
Yeah. 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 It's all about the oil.
I give you that information. And another question, I have donated to Mr. Sanders. Is there any way that I've gone into his website, how I can get organized to start a campaign within the state of Missouri?
Oh, that's a good question. I would suggest that you call, well, actually, I don't know. I would go to BernieSanders.com and see what's over there. I frankly, off the top of my head, Lee, I don't know. But, I think it'll emerge. Mm-hmm. 10 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Harbin here with you. Cindy in Bayville, New Jersey. You wanted to share some information with the woman who has an autistic son who's over 21?
Yeah. I think I just tuned in to the end of her conversation, but I know that she said that she had to give up her Social Security benefits in order for her son to receive Social Security benefits.
I'm not sure exactly what she said. It was a fairly complex.
Because that's not kind of how it works. I mean, and that's a federal mandate. It provided the child at 18 qualifies for Social Security benefits, depending on the disability the adult would qualify.
Right.
When you receive Social Security benefits, when you apply, automatically you're sent into the system to receive Medicaid. They put you in, and then depending your income as the caring member, depending on whether you have guardianship or not, because that will affect how disability, you know, the services going down. You're as the caregiver's income would qualify,
right.
Sort of.
Right.
In terms of whether they would receive food stamps or not, it would not affect the actual Social Security benefit in and itself. There is a portion of how you would have to determine rent, and that would also be determined by state. But it wouldn't affect her Social Security. She wouldn't
right.
have to give anything up for that. I know that she was talking about money in terms of what the individual can or can't have, and there are laws that need to be changed, but it is lumped in a lot with the senior.
Yeah, yeah, it's almost confiscatory. Cindy, we're way down here in the weeds about Medicare and Medicaid, and I can hear people turning their radios off all over the country because it's not their problem or their issue or their concern.
Right,
but
if it doesn't affect you, it's
Right. But thank you for sharing that information. Hopefully she's still listening and maybe she can, you know, take it to the next step. Thank you for the call, Cindy. Nancy in Fruitland Park, Florida. Hey, Nancy. Ben Carson?
Hi. Yes, thank you for taking my call. My mother had called me earlier, and, you know, she's all excited that Ben Carson is running for president, which I didn't know.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering, I know you had a caller earlier that was, you know, speaking, and you elaborated on it just a little bit. I was wondering maybe if you could just say a little more, because my mom is like, well, you know, he's a great doctor, and he separated these two twins, and he did this. And I'm not denying that.
No, he's quite famous for that.
Yes, just, you know, but he's also on Fox News all the time, and like you said, he has, you know, he said things about President Obama, and it's just, you know, I mean, how do you, you know, I mean.
Well, if my mother was still alive and called me up and said, hey, you know, Ben Carson's running for president, isn't that cool? I would say, yeah, he wants to privatize your Social Security. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, right. That's a good one. Thank you.
Yeah. I mean, just pick some of the Republican policies that you know, Carson either implicitly or explicitly supports by virtue of being a Republican and you know, hating Democrats and all that. Yeah, you know, Ben Carson, he's a very, very smart man, and he wants to take away your Medicare or your Medicaid. You know, he wants to cap, you know, long-term unemployment. Well, actually, they've already done it. The Republicans have already done it. You know, they want to send your jobs overseas. They want to, you know, do away with the minimum wage. I mean, it's just like, you know, where do you start? You know, the long list. But particularly if it was, you know, my mom, as in, you know, somebody older than me, somebody who presumably is on Social Security, I would point that out. Nancy, thanks for the call. I got to move along. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Well, I was wondering, Dr. Tom, have we seen the real Republican candidate yet? I feel like we're playing whack-a-mole with what's out there.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if next spring they're going to show up with the real candidate. But right now in corporate media, you don't see anything about Fast Track, TPP, or the fact that a lot of states have a senator up for re-election.
Right.
And people keep forgetting that if you've got a problem and you don't like what the country's doing, you've got to start at home and get out there and find someone to replace a senator you can't stand. And I really wish you'd talk more about this.
Yeah. Well, there will be plenty of time. There's, you know, we're a year and a half, more than a year and a half out for the next election. But I think that the reason that you haven't seen a real Republican enter the race yet is that the Republicans who are in the race, by and large, are scam artists. They're hustlers. They're people who know that if they, you know, like Ben Carson, you know, or whatever, any of these guys, you know, this is how Michelle Bachmann became a millionaire. This is how many of these guys, you know, Newt Gingrich became a millionaire. This is how many of these guys in politics get very, very wealthy. This is how Sarah Palin became a multimillionaire. They run for president or run for public office, accumulate enormous amounts of money, ideally in a PAC, in a political action committee. And then the rules of the PAC, once you're no longer running any longer, allow you to basically turn that money over to yourself. There are some restrictions on how it can be used, but not a great deal. And the FEC, the Federal Election Commission last week, just said they're not even able to oversee any of this stuff. So I think so far all we've seen are the people who are either jumping in because they're narcissists or because they're running a scam on the Republican voters. And there's a bunch of those scams out there, by the way. And on the other hand, the real Republican candidates, the serious ones, and I think that's probably pretty much going to be Scott Walker and Jeb Bush. They're playing another game, which is that as long as they haven't declared, they can raise mind-boggling amounts of money from people like the Koch brothers and other billionaires out there without having to comply with campaign law because they're not declared candidates, and which is arguably against the law too. Except again, the Federal Election Commission says that they can't enforce the law because there are six people who run the Federal Election Commission, three Democrats and three Republicans. And the three Republicans constantly block the three Democrats from trying to do anything about enforcing campaign finance laws. And so, you know, they're rendered impotent. And the consequence of this is that the Republicans are playing this game. And I don't know, maybe some Democrats are even playing that game. And it's not a good thing. And so anyhow, Norma, thank you for the call. Whew, what a day. It just flew by. I guess that's an auspicious start to the week. I hope you have a great day to the rest of your day, and I look forward to seeing you tomorrow. Same time, same place, and don't forget, democracy isn't a spectator sport. Democracy is something that only works when all of us pitch in, all of us help out, when all of us participate. Tag, you're it. See you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans. Engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.